Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today is Veterans Day, and as a part of the 100th anniversary commemoration of the First World War, the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities at the University of Tulsa has hosted several events this month remembering the legacy of the war, which have included stage events as well as collaborations with Corrigus Production. Currently this week, they're including an academic symposium on the influence of Vicente Blasco Ibáñez's 1916 novel masterpiece, The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, as well as the classic 1919 silent film adaptation by director Rex Ingram. This will culminate in the English language premiere this evening of a new documentary on Blasco and the creation and influence of the Four Horsemen. The Fifth Horseman, A Vision of World War I by Vicente Blasco Ibáñez, is a Spanish docudrama featuring photos, images, period footage, and interviews about Blasco's work and his involvement in the Great War. The University of Tulsa Spanish Literature professor Christopher Anderson is one of the interviewees in the film, and it was produced for Spanish television, and will have a free showing this evening at 7:30 at the Lorton Performance Center on the University of Tulsa campus. My guests today are two of the filmmakers. Enrique Viciano is the producer. He shares the directing and screenwriting credit with his collaborator, Rosana Pastor. Both are very active in Spanish cinema and television. Pastor is also a well-known, talented actress in Spanish films and television who received Spanish Film's Goya Award for Best New Actress. Again, the showing of The Fifth Horseman takes place tonight at 7:30 at the Lorton Performance Center. And Enrique Viciano and Rosana Pastor are our guests today. Enrique and Rosana, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse was a remarkable film for its time. It's one of the great anti-war novels. It's a great anti-war silent film. And yet, we have to remember, at least the novel occurred as the war was going on. That in and of itself makes it quite remarkable, wouldn't you say?
Well, in fact, it's probably the novel which came right immediately after the start of the war. And immediately after the war was finished, the movie was shot in the States in 1921. So the timing was kind of perfect because the real situation about the war was very close to the audience when they read the novel or they watch the film when the film was done. The people feel very close with the story, with the situation.
How did this film come about?
We were aware of the centenary of the war, and mostly we were very aware about giving the audience the chance to rediscover Blasco Ibáñez. Not only in Spain, but as well abroad. We were trying to find the place to put Blasco Ibáñez in that precise moment when we are commemorating the first centenary of World War I.
And what I found interesting was this story that he wrote was intensely personal. He's drawing on his own influences, and of course the situation of the novel. It involves an Argentinian family who have both French and German relatives who all end up in Europe as the war breaks out and find themselves on opposite sides. It's a very intensely personal story.
Yes, I think Blasco Ibáñez have a commercial vision of the literature in the moment that he write the novel. It's the sum of European caste with relations, territories of Spain, Argentina, the sum of the very important actors and actresses. No?
It's true that Blasco writes in a way very closely to his own experience.
He had spent time in Argentina.
Yeah, so he spent the time in Argentina, so he perfectly well knows about what he was talking about. He was involved in a love story with a married woman, which it's more or less the situation that he describes in the novel. So it's true that he writes in a very personal way. He used his personal experiences to make literature, and in that case to written this novel based in that precise moment when he was in Paris as well, having this love affair with the woman that he loves. So the experience of the main character in the novel is very close to Blasco's personal experience.
I have to admit, I haven't read the novel. It's one of those things I am going to get around to, and this film makes me want to go back and read this classic, but I haven't read the novel. And I know it as an anti-war novel, and the remarkable thing to me is this was written in 1916, as opposed to, say, Remarks All Quiet on the Western Front, which is like 1929, 1930. Mm. Humphrey Cobb is writing in the 1930s, Paths of Glory. Mm. You know, all these great, actually, novels that became great films. Mm-hmm. And then the same is true in The Four Wars, One of the Apocalypse. But those were written after the war, after the carnage. He's writing this as it is occurring. Mm. And as much as it's an anti-war novel, it's also a feminist novel in many ways. And I think this is something your film brings out.
Yes, mm-hmm. The film pointed out, because it was one of the aims as well, to introduce this character about the writer, in a way, gave space to the women decisions. This increasing power of women that goes with the story. In a way, Blasco, it's opened this door and let us see the main character, the female main character, taking decisions. There wasn't so easy decisions for that time.
You have this family in Argentina who are of a French background. One daughter marries a German family who returns to Germany. The son of this family goes back to France. He's involved with a married woman. One, that's sort of risque, I think, for the time. I mean, it's a great theme of literature, but still, in 1916 in Paris, to write this, you know, while men are at the front and dying, that there's a playboy back home messing with a married woman, that is sort of a remarkable theme. And I think in the United States during World War I, there was tremendous repression of any sort of dissent, any sort of anti-war feeling. The same was true in Great Britain. And the fact that Blasco Ibáñez could write this in Paris and publish it during the war is quite remarkable.
Mm-hmm. I think the problem around Blasco Ibáñez is the political period in Spain that not contribute to progress, to expand the name of this writer, no? Mm-hmm. The generation of 98 isn't to speak very well around Blasco, no? Because Blasco have a commercial vision of the business, of the publications, the novel price very cheap, and I think it's not the legend, no?
He wasn't setting out to write a masterpiece, he was setting out to write a commercial book that would sell lots of copies, I guess. And yet it became a masterpiece. Yes. But it was incredibly popular.
Yeah.
What did the scholars in the film attribute this popularity to in the United States? Because I think it made its mark in Europe, but it was really popular in the United States. And it was somewhat unusual, I think, for a European novel to have that much success at this particular point.
It seems that at that time there were a lot of communities of mostly women.
Book clubs.
Yes. It expanded in a way because there are a lot of book clubs, women book clubs, that they were reading the book and spreading the book one to the other. And it was so popular as well because in a way it related the own American story, because they join, even if it was at the end, they joined the war as well. So the novel was talking about something that was related with the American story, and it was, in a way, was as well a love story.
You know, you have to remember, this is the time of suffrage in the United States. I mean, women were getting the right to vote, and all of a sudden, here is this madam, a married woman, who is taken up with this younger lover while her husband is in the war. In fact, the only reason the young man ends up going into the war is because her husband is a casualty of the war, and she's feeling remorse and sadness, mm-hmm. and this encourages him to get involved in the war effort. So these are really sort of potent, in many ways, a dime store supermarket theme, but he pulls it off with his wonderful
And as one of our scholars said, Rafael Corbalan, a professor in the New York University, he said the novel was talking about a very controversial subject at that moment, which was divorce. Mm-hmm. So there was a kind of several things that makes it works perfectly well.
Now, why do you think we remember this novel more as an anti-war novel as opposed to these feminist themes? Was it just because of the power of the writing about the war itself? Or is it the silent film, for that matter?
I think it was a combination.
I think it introduced this concept of Latin lover. It's very, very important because in this moment, the Latino is not considered in use society the first category. No?
Right. Yeah? Inferior in some ways. Yeah, right. And this gives the Latino lover sort of persona sort of a power, and certainly in the case of courtship and the romance. And that also shows up in the silent film, especially because your protagonist is Rudolph Valentino. So this really showed up in the film version.
I think it is another question is to introduce the concept of bestseller.
Well, it became like, I mean, you just have to look after Valentino's premiere. I mean, it's like he's in a succession of roles, which is the same Latin lover motif. Mm-hmm. And how powerful is that image, and how important is that image in sort of asserting equality in certain cultures, say Anglo-Saxon culture or American culture?
It's related with the time when the women were getting more and more consideration, social power.
I think we would say asserting their independence.
Yes, the women.
I mean, they're no longer chattel in a relationship or something like that.
Exactly. And at that time, there were a lot of, if we focus in the story about the novel and the book and the film even, the woman was a woman, the person who asked for the rights to publish the novel in the United States. Was a woman who decided that the novel was a very good story to make a film of. You know, it was a kind of, it was a moment where the woman rights were in a way of exploding.
And one of the points your film makes is that, and this was less to an extent in the United States, but certainly in Europe, women were stepping out of the home into the workforce. They had to because of the huge demands on the military call-up in all three of the main countries, Germany as well as France and England. Women were being called into the workforce. We experienced that in America to a greater extent in World War II, where you had the Rosie the Riveter. But this was very important in Europe, and once you have had that experience of independence, financial independence many times, political independence, you don't give it up easily. And this is some of the themes that the book brings out.
Yes.
My guest today is Rosana Pastor and Enrique Viciano. Enrique is a producer. Both are co-directors and co-screenwriters of the film The Fifth Horseman, A Vision of World War I by Vicente Blasco Ibáñez. The premiere of the English language version takes place this evening at the Lorton Performance Center in the University of Tulsa. The Oklahoma Center for the Humanities has been presenting a symposium on the film and on Blasco Ibáñez as a part of their commemoration of the centennial of World War I. You can see this film, which also features clips and stills from the 1919 film by Rex Ingram. And this was an important film, wasn't it? And it, I think you have a couple of film historians who talk about how this was a major breakthrough in silent film and telling really important social stories as well as a spectacle, too, of trying to put together these incredible war scenes. Give us a sense of what this film looks like.
It was a very, very remarkable film, but in that time. They used, in some scenes, in the war scenes, they were using 14 cameras shooting at the time. And the effects of the light, one of the our scholars, who is an Academy Award, he said, as he explained to us in the documentary, that the lightning was so amazing for the time that every photographer, cinematographer at that time, wanted to imitate John Seitz, the director of photography. It was a very, very remarkable film at that moment, technically, and as well because the character of this Latino man, Valentino, bumps into the situation.
Uh-huh.
And because, as we were talking before, the image of women were changing as well.
It's considered best film that the birth of a nation, because technical and narrative is very
strong. Yeah.
Very strong. And David Ward Griffith have a list of the 10 films very important the history of the cinema, and the Four Horsemen is in number 10 of this list.
And I tell you, from what I can see of the film, the idea of the lighting and it looks like a natural. It looks like a film from the 30s, except for the fact that it is silent. In many ways, the look of the film and the look of the scenes, say in drawing rooms. It has this very naturalistic lighting that you would see from the 30s, and when you compare it to other films of that era, it's just night and day difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think one of your scholars, that same scholar you were referring to, said they were spending as much money on the battle scenes as MGM or whoever.
As they use for an entire film, exactly.
It is quite a remarkable film. And it introduced Rudolph Valentino. Again, it had these deep, mature themes. And you also allude to how this era was very short-lived in Hollywood, because within a year or two, there would be some Hollywood scandals, one involving Fatty Arbuckle, and all of a sudden, Hollywood abandoned, because, again, this was controversial material, because it's dealing with divorce, it's dealing with infidelity, and the Hays Code would come in a few years and, you know, keep people's feet on the floor instead of on the bed, and that would be it. And so this was like this little short moment that wouldn't happen again in film for another 20, 30 years.
Yes. It was a kind of a very open moment for the film history, and it doesn't happen till many, many years after. And as we said in the film as well by one of our scholars, the film shows the new tendencies in the society in that moment, in sexual and love, this divorce, controversial subject, and the war as well. We was as we were saying, very close in the time, and technically was very, very bright. So, as I was saying before, it was a kind of combination of several things that makes it a kind of big piece, a kind of a masterpiece at that moment.
No. I think it's remarkable the influence this novel into the period. Remarque, Hemingway, Cobb, more writers that write novel after the year
1920s, yes, right, uh-huh. Right. So it's influencing all these other writers like Hemingway and the like, and Remarque, and again, I'm really struck by the fact that it was written during the war. Now, was the market, you mentioned this, as it was a commercial product, was the group that Blasco was marketing to, was this written mainly for a Spanish audience? Because, you know, Spain was neutral during the war, or was it mainly for a French and pan-European audience.
When Blasco came to United States, mm-hmm. for he have a tour of also universities, mm-hmm. and for one conference pay $1,000 for one conference in 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Is the vision of the business, the Blasco Ibáñez.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. for example, when he write a novel, he was settled down in France, and in a way he had the sense of writing this novel to make people feel in the part of the Allies. So he wanted to get the support of the people. This was the main aim of the novel. It wasn't a novel written for the Spanish audience.
Mm-hmm. It was written for
the Spanish population. Was a novel written with the idea of reaching as much people in the foreign countries, France, England. In a way, he had this kind of very, very sharp mind. And in a way, we say that he had this kind of vision mm-hmm. of... I'm a little bit afraid of the word, but how can I say it? He had this clairvidence.
Clairvoyance.
Uh-huh. Yes. So he wanted to make an international novel.
Right. And yet you said it was sort of from the Allies' point of view, but it's always been read as a complete anti-war book,
yeah.
which is interesting. And this gets into the other aspect is right after the war is over, he's very prescient in understanding that this is going to happen again in a few years. Mm. And in fact, your title of your film actually comes from this idea he was perpetrating in the years after the war, that he said, I've written The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse about World War I. You know, at some point I'm going to be writing The Fifth Horseman, which will be the next war. And he's talking about this early in the 20s. Really?
Yes, it was in 1922.
Right. Well, it's a really remarkable film that explains a little bit what Blasco Ibáñez is about. And you also do it as a docudrama, too. That was sort of an interesting... Why the decision to do it as a docudrama where you have an actor portraying Blasco and you also have a actress portraying you, too?
In a way, it is a kind of... Yeah.
She's editing the film and trying to get it together. What was the decision-making process of that?
When I arrived to the project, the character of Blasco was already in the script.
Uh-huh.
When Enrique, as a producer, came to me and asked me if I wanted to be involved in the project as a co-director with him, there was a script, but it was a very different one than the one we shot. But the character of Blasco was always there, mm-hmm. because it was very important to talk with his voice, to listen his thoughts, to see the man thinking by himself and translating his thoughts to the novel, mm-hmm. the way he lives to the novel as well. So the character of Blasco was always there. At the beginning, it was the only kind of part of dramatization was Blasco. And by the time we were rewriting the script, suddenly appears the opportunity of watching this young woman directing the documentary and trying to find out what was exactly about with this man, with this polyphacetic character.
Uh-huh.
That as she said in the documentary itself, we probably will need 10 films like this one to talk about the man, because it's so vast, all the subjects that it has to do with the character. Blasco was so polyphacetic and was as big as we don't have enough with a film to talk about the character. So,
now, what was the reaction in Spain? This has already aired in Spain. What's been the reaction for Valencia TV and the like?
Well, for me, one of the most important things is something that it happens to you as well. It's that the people said, I'm really dying to arrive home and start reading Blasco, whatever, the Four Horsemen or whatever, or rather reading or watching the films. Or Minelli's film by the one that he,
which is not so great. You should go back.
Well, it depends. There are two, and or the first one, the silent film. So this is for me was one of the most kind of great things that makes the documentary feel to the audience.
So your audience is rediscovering Blasco.
Yes, The film is watching in public broadcasting Televisión Española, and its share of audience is very good. It's a film appreciated for the people, and in the presentation of the premiere in the Opera Palace in Valencia. Really have many people, and the expression, the consideration is very, very good.
All right. Very well, we look forward to the English language premiere as a part of this conference. and we should mention that Chris Anderson from the University of Tulsa was a contributor to the documentary as well. And we look forward to that premiere this evening at the Lorton Performance Center. Enrique, Rosana, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Spanish filmmakers Enrique Viciano and Rosana Pastor speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. They're the producer and co-directors and co-screenwriters of The Fifth Horseman, A Vision of World War I by Vicente Blasco Ibáñez. There'll be a free showing this evening at 7:30 at the Lorton Performance Center as a part of the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities commemoration of World War I. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.
The University of Tulsa welcomes the Greater Tulsa community to a wide array of athletic events, artistic performances, exhibitions, academic lectures, and symposia held on campus. Our public events are open to all. Requests for accommodation of disabilities may be directed to Dr. Tawny Taylor at 918-631-2315. To ensure availability of an interpreter, 5 to 7 days' notice is needed. 48 hours is recommended for all other accommodations.